Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome once again to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we dive once again into Groundhog Day. It is that time again, and being Brian's number one movie, we have committed ourselves to talking about Groundhog Day every time that very special holiday rolls around.
Such a special holiday.
You can join us in that discussion on Twitter at 10kmovies. Or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. In this episode, as we talk, we're actually going to be inspired a bit by the Bill Simmons podcast, The Rewatchables, and just do kind of a deep dive into the movie about favorite moments, quotes, characters. Our top five, though, is going to be our top five possibilities for a Groundhog Day sequel. And this top
slash
five will not...
reboot slash reimagining.
Right. This will be not only Brian's top five, but my top five as well. We'll talk about those together. But before we get to all of that, Brian, it's been a while since we checked in. Where are you on the quest for 10,000?
8,838.
I get excited every time you get closer
to
a milestone, like an even 100, you know. That's just really
exciting. Last I checked, it appears that I'm just over two movies a day to get there. So I'm really, the number is getting smaller. That particular number is like my per movie goal that I have to set.
I feel like, have you hit upon a recent treasure trove of like short films that have been able to pad?
I've been watching a lot of Looney Tunes short films. I've seen every Looney Tunes film released up until 1949. Let's put it this way. There are 1,078 total Looney Tunes films that were released from roughly 29 to 19, you know, well, some of them released in this decade. And 1,078, and I have 300 to go.
Well, that's great. What is the last movie you watched, Looney Tunes or not?
I watched one of the... I think I mentioned in a previous podcast that I had seen one of the newest Dave Chappelle comedy films. I watched the other one today, Dave Chappelle, Equanimity. And it was really good. I mean, of the two, I liked it much better. Although the end of that other one where he's talking about that book written by this former pimp or whatever, that was really powerful and really sort of surprising in a way. Not to say that I had, but it came out of somewhere. I didn't expect Dave Chappelle to be that well-read, I guess, because he doesn't portray that in his act. But when he said that was explained, if you knew that book, you understood why he quit his show. It just cast it in a whole different light, and I'm fascinated by him now.
Yeah, I agree. These last two specials that came out most recently, maybe not as like outrageously funny as the two before that.
But genuinely,
oh my gosh, yeah, make you think more, feel like you learned something more. It's pretty amazing.
I'll give a special shout out too, because it came out this week, and I watched the Netflix original movie about one of the founders of National Lampoon called A Futile and Stupid Gesture.
Right.
And it was not necessarily thought provoking, but it's really cool when it's just really cool to go back and have all those people and see all of those comedic talents that were all just like circling in the same orbit and how they were. It's just fascinating. I love the casting of Joel McHale as Chevy Chase. That just floors me to think about.
Well, that provides a nice step to our really big topic in this episode, because National Lampoon was associated with folks like Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, and they, of course, made the masterpiece, the best film of all time, Groundhog Day.
There are 8,800 films that just do not quite make it to this level of perfection.
That's true. So, as I said, we're going to take a page inspired from Bill Simmons' Rewatchable podcast, and do just a deep dive on the movie rather than talk about some of the themes and things like that that we've done in previous Groundhog Day podcasts. Of course, we all know Bill Murray. It's also his masterpiece. And an acting career that's actually pretty distinguished and marked by a lot of amazing roles. So we're going to first talk about what is the best non-Bill Murray performance in this movie. And to be honest, it's so Murray-centric that the pickings are very slim and painfully obvious. You have Stephen Tobolowsky, you have Chris Elliott, you have Annie McDowell, and then you have the groundhog. Like, who else could you even put up first before maybe we talk about these performances?
I'd say Brian Doyle Murray. You know, the choking scene, he holds the groundhog quite a bit. he congratulates him at the end.
Well, to me, if this category was best, you know, non-Bill Murray, you know, like the best Murray actor who's not Bill, Brian Doyle wins in a landslide.
I think so.
I think 10 other Murray brothers are in the film.
He tells them, you know, aim high, don't shoot the groundhog. I mean, come on.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. But let's try to focus more on Tobolowsky, Elliott, McDowell.
To me, the scene stealer is Stephen Tobolowsky. He steals every scene he's in. He's the part that I think most people remember from the movie. I think that, you know, watch out for that first step. It's a doozy. I mean, come on.
I mean, you just said he steals every scene, which is incredibly hard to do given the dialogue in every scene is...
It's exactly
the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stephen Tobolowsky is, far and away, I agree, the most memorable person outside of Bill Murray.
He probably could have filmed his work in, 2 days. Because it's the same scene, 5 times, and some of those don't even involve words. It's just Bill Murray pushing him and or punching him.
And for the most part, too, I mean, you also have to give it to him because I think, like you said, he's probably someone that most people remember about the film. If Groundhog Day is in, say the Oscars are doing some special compilation of special iconic films, they're gonna show Phil Connors and
Phil
it's gonna be Tobolowsky and Murray. Yeah, it's gonna be that. So Stephen Tobolowsky, best non-Murray performance. Have you ever heard Tobolowsky and his podcast?
Oh.
He is a fantastic storyteller.
Amazing.
Go check that out. Even if it's not current, go check that out.
He has a movie, and I don't know when it came out. I think it was the year he turned 60. He has Stephen Tobolowsky's birthday party. And it's just bizarre. But it's so cool. Yes, he's had a long career in Hollywood of being... He's probably, I'd say, number one that guy of all time. That not everybody... But at some point, though, he's become more than that guy because now he's recognized. But he's been in so much and has such a long career dating back and stories about all these people. And he just is, like you said, he's a fantastic storyteller.
Given all we said about Tobolowsky, the winner of this next category may seem really obvious, but maybe not. Best quote from the movie. Phil Connors? But there are so many. A couple of others we need to mention.
I'm telling you, my best scene and my best quote probably, because this is the one that I just go to right away, and for whatever reason, is Jeremy for Flapjacks. I mean, that just, I love that.
Well, you have that. You also have go to WrestleMania.
WrestleMania. The perfect, gift for a wedding, of course.
You know, I got you, babe. You know, even...
A lesser movie probably would have had Phil say that to Andy McDowell at some point in the movie, right?
Yeah, probably, but this is no lesser movie. My favorite Murray line, I'm a god. May not be the god. and that whole soliloquy,
I'm immortal.
That goes
forward. There's one scene where somebody's like, why would you kidnap a groundhog? And then Chris Elliott or somebody's like, I can think of a couple of reasons.
There's so many good ones.
Horrible.
So your quote again is?
Too early for flapjacks.
Too early for flapjacks, that's good. Yeah, you also have, in addition to Phil Fulcair, you have the end of that sequence. Watch out for that first step. It's a doozy.
It's a doozy.
I think we have our own personal ones. I think, honestly, if we're being objective, you have to, again, give it to Stephen Tobolowsky. But really, there's no loser in this category. They're all winners as far as best quotes. Those are some of the things we love about this movie. But the biggest problem or problems in the movie, and really there's one that jumps immediately to mind, and it's the winner.
Sure.
And we can name it and then talk about any others we have, but there's nobody of color in this
That's
movie.
True. I mean, you know, I don't even know that 5 years ago that would have been as glaring as it is. You know what I'm saying? I think that's something that in retrospect only becomes more and more. Like, and this is true for all stuff and shows made in the era. I know a lot of people have said something similar about Friends, its lack of diversity, although they did have Charlie in later season, but its lack of diversity. And Seinfeld, of course, has been notoriously sort of skewered for it. So Groundhog Day by no means alone in this stretch, but I think as we move forward in our world, looks so much different and is represented so much differently, it becomes harder to look back and not think, what's going on here?
Right.
So,
with
you're right.
Any other things though to mention about in terms of any problems with the plot, pacing, structures, or anything that happened that you're just like, oh, I don't know if that was the best choice?
Of course I love the movie, but it feels, I don't really know exactly. And maybe this is intentional. Maybe the ambiguity is part of what is the charm. But I'm not sure what, like, flipped the switch. Like, what he did to earn the right to go to February 3rd. You know, you could say it's him and Rita, but she stayed with him before. And in some ways, the time where she spent the night with him before was, from her point of view, a much more honest and earnest sort of, I'm willing to make this, you know, journey with you. So it's just because they spent that day and he told her about everything. He was just open and honest with, but start that day over. So I'm just not sure, like, what it is that he, and how many days did he go through that routine to perfect it? And there's so many other things, you know, where how did he, the timing of going and saving the mayor from choking, and then being there, and then stopping and then going and jacking the car. You know, that takes a lot of time to develop that thing. And I don't know what magical combination made it to where that made it okay. It's just, I don't know. It irks me a little bit, but at the same time, I can understand and sympathetic the idea that that's part of what the mystique of the movie is.
Yeah, that ambiguity is there, which makes a category of, like, you know, what's your biggest question, you know, about the movie, you know, kind of the very things you said, you know, how long is it? Why does it start? Why does it stop?
In that way, it does become sort of something you can paint your own impressions onto. It becomes like a blank canvas.
Well, to me, also, the biggest kind of question, or not necessarily a flaw in the movie, but you know, you only see it from one person's perspective, how this is happening. And so, you know, sometimes you're just like, I wonder how they're perceiving all of this. You talked before about there was, at some point, there was discussion that maybe Annie McDowell's character also Rita was going through kind of the same process. And they don't
apparently that was an early,
it.
And I don't know, and some of this may be apocryphal at this point, but apparently that was an early draft of the script, was that they were both sort of stuck in this eternity together. And, you know, I'm not sure if they both immediately realized it or if it was something they slowly sort of came to, and it became much more about their journey as opposed to his journey. And apparently there was an early draft of the script that was much more explicit in how he was first cursed to spend a seeming eternity on February 2nd. It's weird in some ways that a studio agreed to finance and put this movie out with no... It just feels like a weird studio movie, you know what I'm saying?
So maybe we've developed another category, and what was the smartest choice of the movie? Even though it's frustrating, leaving the ambiguity in and not doing some stupid, he was, like, explicitly cursed thing. That was a really smart choice. in addition to, you know, the casting choices and just about everything Bill Murray does in this film. All right, last category before we get into our top five sequels for Groundhog Day. Just what overall is kind of your favorite moment of this movie? If you had to boil it down to just one.
I'm not sure. I love so much of it.
Well, here's some things to kind of help you. Here's some ones I jotted down. Time that he punches Ned when he comes far, just boom, right out. The whole death sequence where you see him throw the, you know, takes the toaster, goes upstairs, throws it, and it cuts to the dining room and the lights kind of dim, and you see all kinds of other things. That goes straight into the dialogue with Rita about being a god or being immortal. There's a time when he's answering the Jeopardy questions.
That's a fantastic point.
There is just the whole closing ending sequence when he does finally get it right. That's pretty great. And then my personal pick is the sequence with the homeless man. And that whole thing is just, I mean, it's just kind of picture perfect.
It is. So, and that sequence is the only part of the movie that is not, can't be played for laughs. You know, I mean, it's the only part of the movie gets super serious. Mm-hmm. And there's no, like, you know, even other scenes that get somewhat serious, there's always some sort of, like, Murray snarky comment that sort mm-hmm. of breaks everything mm-hmm. and deconstructs it. But there's no attempt to do that here. I mean, he even says something like, you know, where he says, like, eat your soup. It gets cold
oh, yeah.
hard down
that,
there, whatever.
That eat your soup, yeah.
Which is,
oh,
but even that
good.
Plays as being earnest and not being, you know, it is sort of his way of dealing with everything, which is to put up that veneer of cynicism. But it plays more of, like, he's earnestly trying to, like, come to grips with this situation. Yeah. And, it's a tough scene. It feels... But it really does put everything else into a yeah. different perspective.
Yeah, and so maybe favorite isn't the right word for me, but I think it's the best moment of the movie.
It's the crux of the movie. It's the crucial point of the movie. Yeah.
All right. Well, those are the kind of categories we have. We could talk about all these things and more besides Groundhog Day for hours. And this is, you know, technically I guess our third hour. Talking about this movie, but we want to move on and think about if there was ever a movie that kind of, you know, you would think it'd be there'd be a sequel to, it'd be a movie about repeating the same day over and over again, since a lot of sequels nowadays seem to be repeating the first movie to begin with. So we're going to go to our top five, and the top five sequels that we've come up with for Groundhog Day. So at number five, we're going to have what we already talked about. We're going to lean into that earlier draft of the script, and we're going to have a version of Groundhog Day, a sequel, where Rita and Phil, now they may be different characters somehow or that sort of thing, but they both are reliving the same day over and over again.
Yeah, that obviously was considered before. It becomes a different movie. It becomes about, you know, like we talked about earlier, it becomes much more about their journey as opposed to his journey. But I'm okay with that,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, so it's sort of a spiritual sequel, maybe not a direct sequel, but... I think the creators would be okay with that, you know, doing something a little bit off the beaten path, but going back to maybe an idea that just wouldn't work as well, given who is involved. Number four is also maybe more of a spiritual sequel, and that is to do Groundhog Day 2 as a documentary, maybe a Groundhog Year, if you will. Brian, explain the premise of Groundhog Day 2, Groundhog
Year. Decides that they are going to, you know, in the sense that Groundhog Day, he relives the same day over and over and over and over. Well, this would be someone who, in an attempt to challenge themselves, says they're going to live 1 year, and they're going to, at some point every day of that year, watch Groundhog Day. So for an hour and 40 minutes of their day, every day for a year, watch Groundhog Day.
And would they be kind of trying to judge at the end of the year, has my soul been perfected, affected?
What, do you think, you know, rarely does anybody, I mean, people, as someone who watches a lot of movies, when people exaggerate and they say, oh, I've seen that movie 1,000 times, no, you haven't. Like, no, you flat out have, you have not, you may have seen it close to 50 times, 60, you have not seen that movie when that has not happened.
So it'll be a movie about resilience, about determination, about perseverance.
It is, and a movie about, I think it would ultimately be about a movie about how you could talk about your relationship with art, or his relationship with you, is in some ways similar to actual relationships, in the sense that, familiarity will breed contempt, but at the same time, you can find a new level of understanding that you couldn't find otherwise. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like that same familiarity, which can sometimes get on your nerves, and sometimes you're like, oh, that also provides you with a level of intimacy you will not have with someone else. So.
Well, and I think, too, listeners, after we get done with the quest for 10,000, you can look forward to Brian starring in Groundhog Year.
It'll
probably be his next project.
Certainly something that could be a project.
So that may be the reason why it's number 4. Okay, number 3 gets us into, again, more spiritual sequel than direct sequel. Some sort of reboot. This might be a little bit of cheat, because this could involve several premises in one, but some kind of reboot. You could do it where it's Bill Murray's son, and somehow he goes through the same thing.
Well, one thing I think that you would be interesting, especially since you pointed out there's nobody non-white in Punxsutawney, which I don't know what the ethnic makeup of Punxsutawney is, but I imagine that it's closer to something.
I imagine there's at least one black person.
I haven't checked out the census, but I'm guessing, just on a wild goose, you know. So I think it might be really interesting to recast the main role, or one of the main roles, as, I'm thinking Donald Glover as Phil Connors.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Could be a really interesting movie. I wouldn't necessarily, just like I wouldn't recast it with no black people, I wouldn't recast it as like the black version of, sometimes they'll have where every, instead of it being all white, it's now all of a different ethnic. I wouldn't do that either. But I think having, one or two or three principal roles as non-white, or maybe all of the main roles as non-white, and other people could be, it could be fascinating. It could add layers of what you look at.
Right. And you could do the same thing gender-wise or that sort of thing, but it'd be basically the same.
It'd be a lot of the same
plot, but, from a different ethnic gender perspective. Again, more of a spiritual sequel, Groundhog Day 2, Groundhog Day again. All right, now number 2 is the first on this list. It is a actual true continuation of a story of Phil Connors, and it's first shot, exterior shot, house, zoom in, there's Bill Murray 30 years later. What has happened in Phil Connors' life? Where is he living? Where is this house? Is it on the beach somewhere on the coast? Did he want to get as far away from Punxsutawney as he was dealing, as he finally realized after that glorious morning, the trauma he had been through? Is he still in Punxsutawney? Because now that's the only safe place for him to possibly be. Is he married? Is he divorced? Is he widowed?
Think about what that would do. Like, even to your experience, like, if you... It's been 30 years, okay? And for one hand, for you and me, that would feel like, oh, that was so long ago, 30 years ago. But for him, in some ways, it's got to feel like yesterday, because this is a guy who's literally lived 1,000 years. So it's just got to sort of, when you say it went by in the blink of the eye, he'd be like, yeah, it did, compared to what, And it's just, there's so many questions you could ask him, maybe Rita has passed away already.
Or maybe he has been diagnosed now with like some kind of terminal disease.
Yeah.
So he has to face his own death, and And how does he feel? Is he going to wake up after it and relive
would he prefer
some part of his life all over again? Yeah.
I mean, does he, I mean, you know, in one hand, does he kind of, in the back of his mind, think of himself as immortal? You know, and would he trade the interim 30 years? Would he go back to that day if it meant he would never die? I mean, like, does he want to die after all of this, after the 100 suicide attempts? Does he want it to be over? Does he want to keep living, you know?
Crazy existential stuff. I think you would have
to have really good.
It's like the highest dramatic point of the movie. You'd have to have a knock on the door.
Now, could you?
And it would have to be Bill? Bill Connors?
Let's say 10 years from now. Somebody, some studio has the rights to ground and they want to remake this. And say in that interim 10 years that Bill Murray has, you know, darkest of days, has passed away. Could you do that without Bill Murray as Phil?
Nah, not at all.
I mean, could you get some other, like, could you get an elderly Tom Hanks?
Could not happen. No.
Okay.
Could not happen. All right. Number one, and I think this is actually the most likely. See, this feels like something that Bill Murray would do.
It does feel like something Bill Murray
would publicize and promote Groundhog Day 2. You do it on that, like, 40th anniversary of the film. You would get Andy McDowell together. You know, you'd have some kind of premise synopsis typed out. You go do some promotion, and then when the movie comes out, it's the exact theatrical cut from Groundhog Day.
I think that could be really good.
You even cut together like a trailer.
You even have a trailer. You do all this, and you do it as a top secret, super secret project, and it's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day.
You know, you have the premiere of Groundhog Day 2 at Grauman's Chinese Theater, and everybody comes out, and it's just Groundhog Day.
It's just Groundhog Day.
But the key to this is that all of the principals, like when they do their press, when Bill and Chris Elliott and Andy McDowell, when they did go on their junkets and they go on Jimmy Kimmel, they don't talk. They talk about it as if it's a new movie.
Yeah, that's the only way. That's the only way this works.
You stay in character the entire time, and you're always talking about how we're not sure how people will feel about this movie, and it's some bold choices, and I really, you know, you just talk about it as if it's fresh and just came out.
Yeah. I think all these ideas just underline how Groundhog Day can't really ever have a sequel. But it's fun to speculate. It's fun to talk about this movie. And we hope you've enjoyed a bit of this, listeners. Thanks so much for downloading and joining in that. Let us know what you think about this or any other future topic on Twitter at 10kmovies or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Thanks so much for your time. Our next episode, we'll talk a bit about Oscars and Oscar season coming up now that the nominations have been released. But until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline.